Okay, the next argued case is number 19-1808, IPPAL.com Incorporated against Twitter Incorporated. Mr. Hudnell.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Mr. Hudnell, I see your name on an amicus brief, not on the blue brief.
That's correct, Your Honor. At the time the amicus brief was filed, I submitted the amicus brief. Several months later, a VoIPAL switched counsel, and they engaged me to represent them in this appeal, 4 or 5 months after the amicus brief was filed. Your Honor,
because we don't normally have amici argue. And I didn't recall a motion permitting amici to argue, but you're now representing appellant.
I am representing appellant, yes. Yes. And may I please the court. Your Honors, in this appeal, VoIPAL asked the court to reverse the district court's order dismissing its third amended complaint because the district court erroneously determined that VoIPAL failed to plausibly allege that the asserted claims of the two patents in this case recite patent-eligible subject matter. And if we look at the third amended complaint, which is in the appendix at 1333, and specifically beginning with paragraphs 7 through 16, which run on pages 1335, through 1340. In these paragraphs, VoIPAL presents detailed factual allegations as to why the claims asserted both improve upon the prior art and recite an inventive concept. And one of the things that's detailed in these passages.
But let's look at the claims. You have two claims, one from the 815 patent and one from the 005. And looking at claim 1 of 815, it consists of passing information back and forth, receiving a caller identifier, locating a profile, determining a match, classifying the call, producing a message. This is all abstract.
We would disagree that, Your Honor, respectfully, that the claims are abstract, because they recite a sufficiently specific improvement over the prior art.
But if they do so using abstract language, whether they're non-obvious or brilliant, isn't the point. The point is whether the claims are limited to abstract method limitations.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think what's key here and where I was going with this discussion is the recent KPN case, which this court decided and we submitted through a notice of supplemental authority. And in that case, what you had was a similar data. It was media being passed back and forth between devices, data, and the limitations recited such things as capturing data, transmitting data, between the devices. And what happened in KPN is that this court said, that may be, the claim does involve data, and we don't dispute that this claim involves data, but it's not directed to the data. It's not claiming data. And in
but
fact,
where is the improvement?
Right. So
that's what you're saying. It's not targeted toward the abstract idea of gathering data. It's targeted toward the improvement, computer improvement, about what you do with that data. But where does that show up in the specification or the written description?
In the written description or the claims? Because I could.
Well, both.
Okay. So
the claim is what counts, right?
I'll start with the claim, Your Honor. So in order to understand the improvement, it's important to understand what the prior art did. Okay. The prior art, there's two types of prior art that we describe in the first and third amended complaint for call routing. One was PSTN nodes, public telephone nodes. What they did is they routed calls solely based on the number that was dialed. So if your number is, 917-861-3494, it's going to take that number and route the call to the public network. The second type of node that we describe in the Third Amendment complaint are private network nodes. We have a private phone system within an organization. Now, those systems had to, one, make a decision whether, when you dial the number, whether that number was within the private network and it could route the call there, or whether that number was on the public network and it had to place the call on the public network. In order for the call to get to the public network, the user had to take an affirmative step and dial a 9 conventionally to get to the public network. Now, where the improvement is in these, and I should say with respect to PBX nodes, again, the routing was solely based on the number that was dialed. Where the improvement is in these claims is that the routing is based on the number dialed plus information about the caller. And you can see that in the limitation. So if we look at 815 claim 1, the locating limitation locates a caller dialing profile. That profile has certain attributes about the caller in the profile. In the next step, determining a match when at least one
does, does it locate it through a physical process or through software, the movement of data, information?
It's looking the profile up in a database. So,
in other words, the improvement is represented and described by an abstraction.
Well,
it's abstraction on abstraction.
I respectfully disagree because there's another step here, Your Honor, and that is once you have the profile of the caller, then you have to evaluate the attributes in that profile against the number that was dialed, the callee's phone number, in order to make a determination how you're going to route the call, whether the call is going to go to the public network.
Right. So the closest you come is right at the end, where in claim one. You talk about producing a public network routing message for receipt by the call controller. But you don't, there's nothing that explains how that's done or what type of technology is used to accomplish that. I don't see where you have, my problem is getting rid of dialing 9 is great. So that's wonderful. I just don't see where you've claimed that.
Well, There's sort of two issues wrapped up in your question, Your Honor. First, with respect to dialing the 9, the claim here is not it's too simplistic to look at this claim. It covers the situation where you don't have to dial the 9. Meaning, if I dial a number using this claim, it's going to route the call based on not only the number that I dialed, but information about that comes from my profile, and so. It's not simply replacing dialing 9. It's completely eliminating that. It's taking that control as from me as the user of this system. It's taking that control away and then providing additional functionality that didn't exist in these prior art nodes.
But do you claim the classification criteria that's used to make these distinctions?
Yes, yes, we do, Your Honor. In fact,
where.
So one example of the classification criteria appears in claim 12, which is recites wherein classifying a call as a private network call when said reformatted callee identifier identifies a subscriber to the private network. So essentially what happens in this claim is that if in this step where we're...
But there was... the only thing that even... close to the only argument that's even close to having been made that the district court was directed to any claim other than the representative claims that she identified had to do with claim 28. Where did you identify claim 12 as something that needs to be independently analyzed?
I'm not... I'm not certain if it was. I could take a look at the brief. when I sit down for rebuttal to find and see if we separately identified claim 12. But the point is, Your Honor, is that the classification criteria is there in claim 12. Now back to your question about the how issue, how this claim accomplishes its task. I think it's important to go back to what to where I was with the KPN case. The KPN case says that the how question is answered at the level of what is the desired goal of the claim, and have you recited sufficiently specific steps to achieve that goal? And so here, when you were asking Judge O'Malley about the classification step, that is merely one step of achieving the overall goal. And KPN draws that line at the desired goal, here being routing the call with information from the caller and the callee, but it gives you the specific steps that you take to do that. You have to find the profile. You have to compare it to the callee's phone number that you dialed. You have to determine if there's a match, meaning that there's a number in the system that the system recognizes that it can actually make a determination on whether I'm going to route this call to the private network or to the public network.
All of which consists of a computer comparing data, right?
It is. The claim is performed by a computer, but it's an improvement over what existed before in the prior art. The prior art was computerized too. PBXs.
In other words, abstract over abstract. What's abstract to begin with isn't necessarily non-abstract if it is improved on by abstractions, by comparing data.
Again, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree that the claims are directed to data, but even if the claims were directed to an abstract idea, we still believe that we satisfied the second step, the second prong of the Alice test, which is that the claims recite the inventive concept of transparently routing calls in a user-specific manner. And the most critical error that the district court made in this case is that if you look at the analysis of step two, which appears at APPX 34 through 38 and 43 through 46 for the second patent, the district court never considered the allegations in the third amended complaint where we plausibly allege that the methodology, the specific steps recited in the claim were unconventional at the time. Again, remember where I started. PSTN nodes routes only based on the, it was conventional, only to route based on the number that's actually dialed. PBXs, private calls, routed only based that are done on the numbers dialed. Here, what this claim lays out is specific steps for routing the call based on not only the number that's dialed, but also information about me as the caller to make a determination of whether I go to the public network or the private network. And with those allegations that the district court didn't consider, it's VoIPAL's position that this matter should be reversed under the precedent that this court has set in Atrix and Celspin and Bascom, where there were plausible allegations and there was nothing in the record to refute them, specifically at step two, which is inherently a factual inquiry.
Let's save your time.
I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Judge Newman, and may it please the court. Judge O'Malley, you asked my friend, where is the improvement? And he said, I quote, routing based on the number dialed plus information about the caller, end quote. That is the abstract idea found by the district court, and I quote at Appendix 25, routing a call based on characteristics of the caller and callee. We agree that the claim recites that and nothing more than that. And when we focus on the claim language, we have here at step one nothing but an information management a claim. Data comes in phone numbers, which the specification says all these identifiers and attributes are phone numbers. And data comes out, a routing message. And in between is a black box that contains matching criteria and classification criteria that are not claimed, that are not described, and that are not anywhere disclosed to the world. So that when my friend
isn't this like DDR Holdings, though? You've got a computer system that can do X, and then the system says, but I can add to that, I can tweak that, I can make it do Y in a much better way. Why isn't this similar to that?
Well, two reasons, Your Honor. First is this is a generic module. This is software programming. There is no hardware. Remember, in DDR, we actually had the filtering machine was placed on the network, and one of the claims and described in the written description was the physical location of the filtering machine on the network. That was different, right? That was Bascom. In DDR, the workings of the hyperlink was changed from the way it would ordinarily work. And this goes to one of your other questions about not dialing 9 would be great. Mr. Hudnell says this would, quote, cover the situation where you don't dial 9, end quote. I don't know if that's true, but we know it would also cover the situation where you do dial 9. Because if the classification criterion was if you dial 9, you route it to the PSTN, that would meet all the limitations of this claim. It doesn't invent anything, whereas DDR and Bascom, those claims change the ordinary operation of a network in a way that had never been seen before. And that is not claimed here, and it's not in the specification, which is why, to jump to the end of the story, I suppose, I'll go to where Mr. Hudnell started, which is with the complaint. You know, we've heard very little in this case about the claims, because the claim one, is absolutely abstract and contains no inventive concept. The written description, the specification, gets almost no play. They want to go
this
to the complaint.
This was decided based on the pleadings.
Absolutely,
so,
Your Honor.
Why don't we have those cell spin problems?
Well, cell spin is the best case for us, we think, because cell spin says, and let me get the quote exactly right. This is 927 F3rd at page 1317. What makes the claim inventive must be recited by the claims. That's a direct quote from cell spin. And that's what we don't have here. Of course, the complaint can add allegations about what's routine, well understood, and conventional. Once you have something inventive recited in the patent, what the complaint cannot do is create an invention. Patents create inventions. Patents claim. Claims claim, right? And the written description describes. The complaint cannot satisfy step two. The complaint can satisfy the routine, well-understood, and conventional step, but we don't get there in this case. And Judge Koh didn't get there in this case because at step one, it clearly is abstract, and at step two, no inventive concept is claimed. And if there's no claimed inventive concept, we don't ever get to the question of conventionality.
What do we do with the fact that you know, on IPR, the board thought this wasn't obvious, at least?
Well, Your Honor.
Doesn't that imply some inventiveness?
No, Your Honor. Well, we think that's wrong. Of course, that appeal is pending in this court, and Apple is challenging that. This court has many cases. Solutran, for example, where, you know, a previous board determination of obviousness is not determinative of eligibility. Judge Newman has written opinions on this very subject, of course. And they have taken separate paths in the jurisprudence. And, you know, this one has to be evaluated under the 101 standards, and it fails every which way. I mean, there's not a precedent in which a claim drawn to this level of abstraction with no inventive concept disclosed anywhere in the four corners of the patent could survive, which is why Voight Powell wants to talk about the complaint, but the complaint can't get over the failure in the claim.
Should there have been a construction of the claim?
Your Honor, if Voight Powell had asked for a construction, yes, but they didn't. And let's be very clear about what happened here, because it's a little bit misleading, I believe, in the appellate briefs. Voight Powell pointed to claim 28, the means plus function claim, and did not ask that it be construed. And I think this is important because what Voight Powell did not say that it is limited to the structure or the specification, that it's restricted in any way, right? They just said in the opposition that claim 28 and figures 8A to 8D was an example of non-abstractness at step one. That's not true on its own face. If you look at, for example, the means for locating step of claim 28, Voight Powell tells us the corresponding figure is box 258 of figure 8A, which says look up the dialer profile. I mean, it just repeats the same generic element. But more importantly, the court, Voight Powell did not ask the court to construe that claim and did not ask the court to construe any other claim. There is a stray half sentence on page appendix 1325 near the very end of their opposition to the motion to dismiss that says, not only is claim construction required, comma, and then it goes on to discuss something else. No claim is identified, no claim limitation is identified, no dispute is identified, and most importantly, Judge O'Malley, VoIPPEL has never said to the district court or this court what limitation, if construed in VoIPPEL's favor, would change the 101 analysis. And under my mail, that's the question for claim construction, right? If it doesn't matter for 101, we don't need to construe the claims. It's only if they have a 101 determination. The key one, I would submit, you know, the key claim limitation would be the classifying step, right? The classifying criteria, which are not described, which are not claimed in any specificity, which are not described in the specification. There's a reason for that. There's no amount of claim construction can remedy the complete black box nature of that aspect of this claimed method. And so that while, of course, a district court should construe claims upon request, either construe them or adopt the patentee's construction, as my mail says, it is the patentee's obligation to put forward a disputed limitation and explain why it matters for the 101 structure and this patent.
What about the producing a public network routing message for receipt by the call controller?
Well, again, they didn't ask that that be construed, and the only aspect of it, producing the routing message is just data, or sending the data. Whether it's a public routing message or a private routing message, which are the last two elements of the claim, is an output of the classification criteria. It says classifying the criteria as public or private, depending on the criteria, and then you just produce a message that follows the classification. That we come back to the same black box problem, that the classification criteria are never disclosed, are never described. One doesn't know how this invention is practiced. This, by the way, is what defeats the claim, the suggestion that something called user-specific calling is claimed. It's not. We don't dispute, nobody has ever disputed, that information about the caller is described in the first element of the claim. But nothing about this claim requires any user specificity whatsoever. If the classification criteria were every number from the 202 area code gets routed in a particular way, that would be a classification criterion. It would have nothing to do with the user. You know, there's 7+ million phone numbers in the 202 area code. We don't have any teaching, we don't have any claim limitations, and we don't have any teaching in the specification about that user specificity. Dial 9, the only specific example I already mentioned, the claim equally reads on a system in which you do have to dial 9 to get out of your private exchange and onto the public network. So that there's nothing specific or concrete.
So are you saying that even if 101 weren't a problem, this would be a problem under 112?
This would have a problem under 112 and 103, but 112 certainly in the way that they're trying to. The complaint allegations, paragraphs 12 and 13, are describing inventions that are, they're describing aspects that are not claimed, benefits that are not claimed. And to be clear, my point is a method according to claim one might have those benefits, but it might not. They're not required by a method according to claim one, which is why VoIPPEL in his briefing has been very careful to use words like encompass or embody. They never say that claim one is limited to user-specific calling or transparent routing. And this court in Berkheimer made this point extremely clear. Remember, at the end of Berkheimer, the court said that the independent claim one was ineligible, but the dependent claim four and five may be eligible. The dependent claims had to be encompassed by the independent claims. That's black letter law. But it's not enough that it's encompassed. It has to be claimed. It has to be limited. And this goes all the way back to Mayo. The whole two-step framework is based on what is claimed. The first step, you evaluate the claim. The second step, you evaluate the claim. You only get to the complaint when you get to well-understood, routine, and conventional. And so that all of these arguments that have been presented in this case ignore the claim language, because the claim language, which Judge Koh dealt with, every limitation, every word is addressed in her opinion, all established under under DDR and everything else, that this is an abstract claim.
Was there ever a request to Judge Koh to construe or address claims 12 or 28 differently?
Claim 12 has never come up to my knowledge. Claim 28, the only way claim 28 came up, Your Honor, It's in the appendix at pages 1315 to 1316, which is VoIPAL's opposition to the motion to dismiss, and footnote 13, by the way. And what VoIPAL said, and I'm quoting, defendant, and this, so it's a step one argument, defendant's assertion that the claims are directed to an abstract idea is even less plausible for means plus function claims, such as the apparatus in claim 28 of the 815. And then it goes on to say, means would be interpreted under 112.6 to pick up the corresponding structures. That's true if they had asked for that construction. Of course, they don't tell us which corresponding structures. And then in footnote 13, VoIPAL ties out the limitations, the means limitations in claim 8 to 10 of the 53 boxes disclosed in figures 8A through 8D. They don't tell us whether the other 43 are limiting. They don't tell us whether the other 43 do anything. And as I've said, the actual tie-out, to my mind, doesn't change the analysis. Footnote 13 says, for example, means for locating a color dialing profile is block 254. Block 254 is get dialing profile for color. So, you know, means plus structure means the structure actually has to do something. It has to teach a person of skill in the art how to accomplish the means. Repeating the means in a block diagram, in a logic flow diagram, doesn't get you there, even under 112.6. The only point of that, Judge O'Malley, is if they had actually asked for a 112.6 construction, we would have had a go-round about which are limiting, which are enabling, you know, what satisfies the written description requirement, and so forth, and whether a person of skill in the art could have actually programmed a computer based on the logic flows presented in figures 8A through 8D. I think that's an open question. It was never resolved here because VoIPAL didn't ask for it, and certainly as the issue before this court, it's irrelevant because they never have said that there's anything. They have never pointed to a single block, a single arrow, a single logic flow that would change the 101 analysis, because nothing in these figures discloses the two things that they now claim are inventive, they now contend are inventive, which they never claimed in their patent. Your Honor, Judge Lurie, you asked about the amicus brief. Mr. Hudnell represented VoIPAL at the time he wrote that amicus brief, too, and I think VoIPAL is fairly charged with the things in that amicus brief. I think they sort of give the game away there. They say step two always requires a factual inquiry, that's pages 7 and 8, and that the complaint can create a fact question about what the inventive concept is, that's at pages 5 and 6. The court would be making dramatic new law if it accepted either of those suggestions. I think it's flat wrong under Mayo and Alice, both of which direct us to the claims. And the fact that that's the extent to which they have to go on their argument shows that they are so far from the patent. I would ask the court to return to the claims, in particular the representative claims, which Judge Koh identified and which VoIPAL did not dispute below. Claim one of the 815 patent is directed to another idea.
Was that really the point that was being made, or was the point more what Berkheimer and Selspin say, which is that the question of whether something was routine or known or ordinary is a question of fact, and you have to accept all allegations in the complaint on that topic as true.
And on that, Your Honor, there is no disagreement with anybody in this courtroom, I don't think. That is the law under Berkheimer and Atrix at the motion to dismiss stage. Selspin applied that. But that goes to after we identify an abstract idea, so it fails step one, and after we identify in the claim an inventive concept that Amdocs, by the way, tells us has to be supported in the specification. Then we get to the third question, if you will, and that's so the Berkheimer question, there may be an inventive concept. Then the question is, was it well understood, routine, and conventional? That is the only factual question on which any of these cases have been remanded, and that the allegations must be plausible and must be credited. We never got to that point in this case, and we don't ever need to get to that point in this case, because this clearly fails at step one, and at step two, there is no inventive concept recited in these claims or disclosed in the specification, and a complaint cannot create an inventive concept. That would destroy the concept of claiming under patent law. The inventive concept must be in the claims, and only then do we get to the Berkheimer question, and we never do that in this case. I see my time has expired unless the court has further questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Hudnell.
Thank you, Your Honors. So my friend in the beginning of his time indicated that he thinks Selspin is a good case for their side. We think Selspin is a good case for our side. And what you've heard very in addition to having a Selspin problem, we believe that the appellees have a MIMEL problem. And what you heard consistently throughout my friend's discussion is the fact that the claims don't claim what we say that they claim. And that's a claim construction issue. There is clearly a dispute whether the improvements of user-specific calling and transparent routing are recited in the claim. And if we take a look at the claim, you can see that our allegations that we said that they were in the claim, there is plausible language here that would support those allegations that it is recited here. So looking at claim one.
So what claim constructions did you ask for?
Well, Your Honor, I mean, this was dismissed at the Rule 12 stage. We in our brief, we made a request for claim construction. We argued that this decision was premature in the absence of claim construction, but we didn't turn our opposition to their motion to dismiss into a claim construction brief.
But you know, the problem is you've got a district court judge who says, well, does it really turn on claims construction? You ought to at least give me a couple claims or a couple terms that you want construed.
And Your Honor, I mean, we think that even on a plain language basis, the claims recite the improvements that we alleged in the Third Amendment complaint. So for example, in claim one, the limitation locating a caller profile comprising a username, a caller dialing profile comprising a username and attributes associated with caller, those elements, those limitations are all directed to the user-specific aspect feature of this invention, which allows you to route calls in a user-specific manner, because the routing is based on both, like I said earlier, the routing is based on both the number that's dialed and the attributes of the caller. So just looking at the plain language, it's that feature is recited, and for the district court to say it's not there, well, we've got a claim construction issue. And then on top of that, what the case law says, what MIMEL says, is that if we allege that the claims cover a certain feature, she either needs to accept our allegation as true or conduct a claim construction or resolve the dispute. And clearly, appellees are disputing that the claim covers this feature, and we say that it does. That's evident throughout the brief. So there needed to be a resolution of that or a construction put there, and there was no construction. One other thing that my friend indicated is that one other thing my friend said was that the benefits have not been claimed. Well, we know from, again, from Selspin that is not the test. The benefits don't actually need to be in the claim. We've alleged the benefit. We showed where that's recited in the claim, but there's no necessary requirement that all the benefits, all the features that this system provides be recited in the claim. That's not a proper claim drafting.
You have the last word.
Yes, Your Honor. Just wanted to go back to the this notion that my friend raised, that the claim is again just about data. And I think one case that's also instructive here is the Bascom case. Because in the Bascom case, you had the, with respect to inventive concept, you had the recitation of putting a filter at an ISP. That was one of the things that was found inventive, non-routine, and conventional in Bascom. But in addition, in Bascom, what Bascom said was inventive was having a filtering tool with customizable filtering features specific to each user, verification of registered subscribers, associating individual accounts with their own filtering scheme, versatile, so they could be adapted to user preferences. That's what we've claimed here, and I just went through the limitations that capture that in this claim. So, and that was unconventional, not routine, and not well understood in prior art, as based on my previous discussion. So we even think under Bascom, just further emphasizes here that the allegations in the complaint, which are captured by the claims, or at least would be captured by the claims if the court had done a proper claim construction, established that there's nothing in the record that refutes those allegations or refutes them with clear and convincing evidence to the extent that standard applies. And we would ask on that basis that the court reverse the district court's order dismissing this case at the Rule 12 stage. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.